Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom. And we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Welcome back, guys, to another PT Pearl. This time we are diving into wrist injury, wrist pain, different kinds of diagnoses you might hear about, and what you can start to do about them now.
So when we're talking about the wrists, there's a lot of common injuries or diagnoses we may hear. You know, you can hear about carpal tunnel. You can hear about just wrist sprain or wrist strain. Another kind of popular one is TFCC injury, which is the triangular fibrocartilage complex,
This
really big, dense cartilage complex that just helps give our wrist some stability, right?
On the pinky side of the wrist.
Kind of on the pinky side of the wrist. And so people have injury in that. And so why do we develop some of these injuries? Oh, another one is like getting a cyst in the wrist, or people develop these cysts kind of in the wrist joint. So why do we get these injuries, and what can, you know, be some ways that we address that?
Yeah, so we actually showed a really good example of this topic in our first PT Pearl, which was on mobility.
Yeah, because I think where a lot of it comes from is us, especially during exercise or when we're using our wrists, allowing our wrists to kind of smash into ranges that we just don't actually have control in. So we're really just resting into that wrist joint, which can put a lot of strain on muscles and also put a lot of strain on the joint itself.
And not only do we lack control around the wrist, we might lack range of motion. And so if you think about it, the reason we also come back to wrist when we're talking about different mobility is because if I'm going to be in a push-up or a plank position, if you think about the angle from your hand on the floor up your arm, it's a 90-degree angle. Now, how many people can actually put their hand flat back without anything, just out, like your hand just hanging out? Can you actually bend with straight fingers too? Because that's what you do on the floor with straight fingers. Can you bend your arm or that wrist back into a 90-degree angle? And if you can't, or if it's like severely limited and it's like only going back a little bit, imagine now putting your hand on the floor and saying, oh, but it's fine for planks and pushups and everything.
It's fine to put almost my whole body weight through it.
Exactly.
So, the wrist is a really, really mobile joint by nature because it can move in all the directions. You know, if you just have your palm up towards the ceiling, you can kind of tilt your hand towards your pinky. You can tilt your hand towards your thumb. Flex the fingers up towards your, you know, forearm or towards you. Extend them down towards the floor. And then you can pronate, which is kind of like putting your hand then towards the ground, or supinate, which is like putting your palm back up. So it moves in all these different planes. So I think naturally sometimes we just use that wrist to gain extra motion even where we might not have it, or where we might not be able to support in it. So if we realize that, hey, we're not able to get that active range of motion, how can we go about starting to develop this range of motion and develop this support at that wrist joint?
So that's where it's just kind of, it's becoming more aware and being okay exploring different ranges within your wrist. Because if you even notice doing those ranges of motion that you talked about right now, you might notice like, oh, it actually feels really tight, or it hurts maybe to go one way, or I am super limited or I'm restricted. Or maybe even if you notice, if you extend the arm straight and then you kind of bring the palm up toward, or the back of the hand up toward the forearm, or you bend it the other way and you pull, you might notice different strains and pulls at the elbow too. And so this is where it becomes so important to realize, again, we're going to talk about this a million times, I'm sure, how the body all works together, right? Because the muscles that support us around our wrist actually connect all the way from our elbow all the way down into the fingertips. And so that's where it becomes so important, not only to work on this range of motion in the wrist, which we've shown a million times on different platforms on Instagram, it's all in the mobility method, but also to work on strength all the way down into those fingers.
Yeah.
and up into the elbows. So bending the elbows, bending the fingers, grip exercises, exploring range of motion, and exploring strength becomes so incredibly important.
One thing that makes a huge difference for me is when I just focus on pushing into those fingers when I'm doing different wrist, not wrist exercises specifically, but like you said, push-ups, planks. I've been trying to do a lot more handstand stuff lately, and that's when I'm literally putting my whole body weight through my wrists, and I started noticing a lot of wrist pain. And I'm like, ooh, when I push through my fingers a little more, it helps me just give more support on that front side of that wrist that is completely stretched out, and just to give some support through those muscles that Jen was talking about that cross the wrist and come all the way up to the elbow.
Yeah. And so that's where we like to say one of the quick tests, we'll do it again, because why not?
Let's do it.
So we did it in the mobility PT Pearl, but we'll do it in this one. This is where you bring your forearms together and hands together like a prayer. And then what you're going to do is, keeping the forearms together the entire time, you're going to try to roll the fingers down. So kind of let them bend, and then roll the hands up and out so that the palms go straight up to the ceiling, and then extend those fingers out straight as much as you can, and then see, can I make a straight line? Hey, that's actually better. Look at that. You're getting more range. Better.
I'm shaking.
But the goal is to honestly have it like a T from the forearms up out through the fingers and the hands. And that should be like, oh, now I have adequate active range of motion on my wrists. Now I know that when I support into that range of motion in that 90 degree angle, I'm not going to be increasing, you know, this insane amount of load on a range of motion that I cannot carry within my body.
And seriously, if you're wondering what we're talking about, go check this out on YouTube, because people will then say, okay, so what do I do? Like, honestly, do that. If you continue to do that actively and teach into the body, hey, we want to be able to, and we can access this range a little further actively, that's a great way to just get your body to start being used to that. Of course, there is other progressions that can help you access that range and then support through it. So that's where we'll talk into doing some passive stretching, like you're putting your hands together and or on the ground where you're on your hands and knees, kind of, hands flat on the ground. You can turn them around so your fingers are facing you, and then straighten out those elbows so your hands are on the ground and you're kind of stretching into the front of that forearm.
Yep.
Then after that, coming and trying that again, so then you'll actively be supporting into that range. So, of course, there's progressions to get there by passively doing some type of mobility stretch and then actively kind of supporting through that range.
Yeah. And that's why, even if you start to put pressure into the fingertips, like Dom was talking about in that push-up or in that plank position in the handstand, you're also putting like an active force into that stretched muscle, which actually helps as well with increasing that mobility at the wrist as well. So, and then when we pull open, we're actually activating the backside of the wrist. So when we do that at that test, or we continue to do it over and over again, we increase the strength to really use that wrist and get into that extension. So we're using what are called the extensors, or just the back of the hand all the way up into that elbow. And when we then start to make it strong on the front and the back, and we're increasing that flexibility of that muscle in the front by doing a passive stretch, we help to then gain that initial range of motion, which is the place that we have the most range in the wrist, which is flexion and extension. And if we can start there, we automatically help to unload the wrist, to decrease your risk of injury, and to be able to support, especially when we're talking about exercising and getting down on the floor and using those hands.
Totally. And like you said, when you really increase range in one plane, or being that flexion and that extension, we automatically give more slack to the system to then start to explore the other ranges, which would be those side-to-side motions, which we call ulnar and radial deviation. That's just meaning going inward toward your pinky or outward toward your thumb, and those pronation supination motions. So again, once we start getting maybe good at doing some flexion and extension, other ways that we can explore putting support into the wrist, like go grab a bucket of rice. If you have a big bag of rice that's been sitting in your cupboard for forever, dump that into a big bucket, especially if it's your parents, make sure it's okay with them or something. And then just start kind of digging that hand into that rice and moving
gripping
and rotating, rolling and rotating that wrist and feeling, oh, there, I'm a little bit restricted. I feel a little bit restricted in that direction. Work into that.
Or get super tired. Like the other thing you'll notice is like, if you start doing that grip and rotate, you might notice like after five, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm super weak. It gets so tiring so fast when you haven't used your wrist in those ways.
Yeah. Another thing that we want to always keep in mind when we're talking about the wrist and the hands, some of the symptoms or the diagnoses that'll come up can be a product of, like you said, what's happening up at the elbow or even what's happening up at the shoulder and the neck.
Yes.
Especially when we're talking about the nervous system. Our fingers and our wrist and our hands, that is the very end of the nervous system in our upper body. So if there's anything kind of happening along the stream or upstream where the nerves come out of the neck, through the shoulder, if we're compromising a little bit and causing tightness in certain areas in that nervous system or down through the elbow, that can cause some downstream effect on how the hands are feeling sensation-wise, strength-wise, or even some of that mobility in that range. Again, depending on how we're using our shoulder and elbow, we can then feel some different symptoms throughout the fingers. So being aware of tightnesses around the neck and the shoulder could impact some of those symptoms at the wrist.
100%. And that's why, especially when we're talking about like carpal tunnel syndrome or anything like that, you might notice numbness, tingling going down into the fingers, or say that you're falling asleep and you always wake up and you have a hand that's asleep. You know, we cannot just look at this area and say, oh, let me massage out, you know, the tissues right at the wrist, because it could be coming from a little bit higher. And we need that mobility even in the wrist. So, or I mean, even in the muscle tissue. So that means that that nerve needs to be able to glide and slide, almost like flossing through that system, flossing through the connective tissue, through the muscle tissue, where it's not getting clamped down on so hard and being restricted in movement. When it gets clamped down, you can almost imagine like that's how it starts to get kind of pinchy, and numbness and tingling, burning sensations, those things can happen. But what I will say about the nervous system is that it is a little bit more delicate than our muscle tissue. And that's why working with a trained professional, like a physical therapist, there's a lot of different little tiny progressions that we use as therapists that make a really big difference in how your nerves are responding and how they start to move and decrease that sensation of burning, pinching, or tingling or anything like that. And that's why I don't show like a ton of exercises actually on my social media or anything on nerves, because it depends. And if you are feeling those sensations, I just want to reemphasize like seeing a trained professional where we actually learn so intensely how to really work with the nerves in the body, go see a physical therapist. Like it is 100% worth it to change the way that that nervous system is responding and improve the neurodynamics happening in the body.
Totally. So I think that that gives us a good idea of different things that we could be feeling around the wrists and just some different ways to approach those movements, gaining passive range of motion, learning to actively, you know, support through that range, and understanding that, of course, what's happening up at the elbow, shoulder, and neck can be impacting the symptoms at the wrist.
And that's why also, like, you'll notice a difference if you're active within your entire body also affects how you are at the wrist. So say I'm in a plank and I'm like, okay, I'm going to push into my fingers now, right? Because that's going to help to activate a little bit. But what if you also push into the fingers and then thought about the shoulder blades and actually pushing the shoulder blades into the ground? So think of the shoulder blades protracting. You don't have to know exactly what that word is, but think of trying to push those shoulder blades away from the spine and forward into the ground. When I do this, I actually increase my scapular control. I lift my chest off of the weight that's going forward and down into my wrist, and I help to increase that core activation as well. When we get that whole body to kind of contract and work as one with the fingertips pushing into the floor, you will notice a world of difference of the tension going into the wrist when you're holding. So you don't want to feel all the tension at the palm If you're on your hands, you want to feel it into your fingertips, you want to feel it in your shoulder blades, and you want that core to really be active. That's how you'll know that you're really supporting yourself.
Don't dump into the wrists.
Yeah.
That's one thing we always say, dumping into the wrists and just letting yourself rest into those wrists. I had a professor, based on what you just said with, you know, pushing into the shoulder blades and gaining that core stability, they'd always say that proximal stability, meaning stability in the core, stability in the shoulders, stability in the hip girdle, then helps promote good distal mobility or mobility at the hands, at the fingers, or whatever joints down
away from the body.
Away from the body being distal. So proximal stability, and then we can focus on getting good distal mobility.
Exactly. And that's why it all comes back to like what we're doing within and how we're holding ourselves. And that's going to support how the shoulder responds, the elbow, the wrist, the fingers, everything. And so, yeah, we're not talking about one diagnosis. We're not talking about one fix, because it's never like that, guys. Like, I think that you're starting to hear us repeat a lot of things over and over again. It takes work. It takes consistency. It takes exploration. It takes assessments, and it takes getting to know your body and being willing to move into your body. It's that strong coffee time. I'm so not a singer, sorry about that. But can we explain what strong coffee is again?
Yeah, strong coffee is like this coffee latte powder mix that also comes with all these amazing collagens, MCTs, and it basically comes with the nutrition of two eggs. And it does what we actually try to do with coffee in our country, which is make it our breakfast. So I love that it actually comes with just this nutrient packed kick that also gives you a kick to get you ready for your day.
And honestly, it's delicious. You don't have to add anything to it. It's the easiest thing to make. And we have a discount code for you guys, because why not enjoy it with us? Adam's a good friend, and he put this package together for you based on knowing us and why we like it too. So use code OPTIMAL15. The link is in the show notes. Go check it out. Go experience it yourself and let us know what you think.
And welcoming in our next guest, Amanda Rocchio, who on Instagram you might know as Meowmix.
Yeah, she's got over 1 million followers. She educates people on food. And in this episode, she's going to share about her own journey into how she started to really dive into food, why she talks about meal prep and nutrition and all these different aspects, but based on her story behind what she's been through. And it's really, I think, whoever, you know, wherever you are and whatever your relationship is with food, this is going to be such a supportive episode. So let's dive in. So excited to have my good friend Amanda Rocchio on the podcast, who delivers incredible information and food health so often. Amanda, can you just give a quick little intro for the people of who you are and what you've been doing out in the world?
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for that intro. Well, my name's Amanda Rocchio, like you said, and I'm actually Meow Mics on Instagram. And I'm really best known for sharing tons of content around nutrition. I like to say I make nutrition easy to understand. Everything from simple, healthy recipes to just general food facts to like healthy swaps are like one of my most liked types of content from, you know, like instead of eating, you know, this kind of sugar laced ketchup, you know, go get this paleo ketchup. So that's what I'm best known for out on the interwebs. And I really started my journey meal prepping for work because I started my 9 to 6, 5 days a week out of college. And I was like, how do I save money, save time during the week, but still eat super healthy? And meal prepping was what I found to really help answer all of those questions and make sure I was set up for the week and less stress. You know what I mean?
No, I absolutely love everything that you do online and the content that you put out, because it makes it so accessible to people. And everybody has this like story with food that we go through. And a lot of people come up with all these challenges. And so I really appreciate people like you that just make it accessible, because when people have that access, it just seems tangible for them. And they're like, oh, I can do that. And I see so many of your posts that like make me think that in my head, like, oh, I can do that. So
even me, who doesn't like to cook or meal prep or do any of that,
I get more little messages from you of Amanda, your post from Jen, just be like, hey, you need to make this.
I do that all the time. I share your stuff and I story it over to Dom.
She'll be like, oh, these cookies look way better than the ones you made.
I know, So, I know Dom's the chef in the relationship, but Dom is like a chef. I'm like a little more meal prep and simple. Dom like goes all out, which I'm always impressed with.
Well, I appreciate that, but it is all on the same spectrum. And again, it is all about access and where people are at in the kinds of food they can make. And I love to cook, but I kind of want to know more about what made you interested in putting this information out in the first place. You mentioned a little bit your own meal prep with work, but how did it suddenly explode into this big thing online for you?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think actually some of this stemmed back to more my childhood, where I developed an eating disorder going into my freshman year in college. I wanted to lose some weight because I was hitting puberty and I could see myself starting to put on a little weight. And so I lost some weight and I started getting compliments, and that kind of started this snowball effect of eating less and exercising more until it became an unhealthy habit. And I, you know, found myself kind of trapped in this anorexia exercise cycle. And luckily at that time I did get professional help and all that, which helped me, you know, kick that and make a full recovery. But from there, I kind of realized that some of the reasons I went wrong was the education piece, because I didn't really understand, you know, what proper nutrition meant. I thought it just meant eating less. Like, I was like, I just have to eat less. Like, that's how you become healthier. A little bit also, obviously, a little too focused on the look aspects instead of more about feeling good. So that is kind of what really fuels me today in terms of presenting information to women, especially. Like, eating healthy is more about fueling your body with the right foods rather than starving yourself. So that's one of my core messages. And then, of course, that piled on with meal prepping for work. And then also realizing that while I love sharing like the recipes and the meal prep I'm doing, that people really want to know, like, why should they eat certain things or what are some swaps? So getting outside of just myself and really just showing people like what types of foods are good for you and why.
Oh my goodness. This is an incredible story, Amanda. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, because especially in the fitness world, so once you start getting into fitness and you start doing that, a lot of the messages is just calories in, calories out. So, okay, let me just cut my calories. And exactly what you're saying, it starts to turn into more problems and it can turn into a mental aspect of things. How did you know when enough was enough and you needed to go get help?
You know what? Honestly, I was lucky that my parents and doctor actually like forced me into it. They were like, they saw the number on the scale and they were like, this is not okay. Like, this is a problem. You're going to end up hospitalized. So they sent me to get help. So I was lucky in that aspect. Because, you know, when you are in the addiction and you're not ready to let it go, even though you know it's wrong, I'm sure some people can relate to that. But I think also like realizing if your addiction like is making you feel worse, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you're doing less social activities, you're just not having fun in life. And it's like your whole obsession. I've seen people realize it just from that. But in my case, I was definitely lucky that my parents and doctor stepped in. And then, you know, working with the nutritionist and the therapist to realize where I had went wrong, that really helped me. And once I started seeing, like, feeling better, so when I had obviously lost weight, one indication that I was on the wrong path was my sports time. You know, I was a really good swimmer. My sports times were actually going down. So once I started gaining that weight back and that energy, my times were better. You know, I got better at sports. You know, I was just feeling better overall. So that started fueling my recovery once I started to see the positive on the other side of the recovery aspect.
And is it a journey for you? Like, is there still moments where you're like, oh, I'm recognizing that I'm starting to fall back into different patterns? Or is it like, okay, I've made this recovery, I've now developed these new habits that it's no problem for me now?
Yeah, I think because it's been, I don't know how, like, what's high school? What are you, like, 13, 14? It's been so long. So now I'm, like, very confident that, you know, overall, I would never fall back into that pattern. But it was nice, like, my college years. I do, like, and I give this recommendation, if you are an eating disorder, you might need to spend some time away from you know, the calories and the just anything that makes you feel more obsessed over food. I spent years not really so obsessed in college. You know, I did kind of gain the freshman 15, probably drinking a little too much. You know, I still exercise, was still somewhat conscious, but just letting that go for a while. And then when I graduated, I kind of revisited my eating habits and was like, okay, I have put on some weight. Let me lose weight the healthy way this time. And I did that successfully. So that continued to give me the confidence that I am in a good place. And yeah, I'm not really worried now. Like the more I educated myself on nutrition, the less I was worried about falling back into that pattern because, you know, you like reading about the detriments of eating too low calorie for too long will convince you to not do that.
Yeah. So true.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate you sharing your story because like you said, there's so many people, whether in a similar boat as you or very different, that are probably going to resonate with that.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And people...
Have you guys ever struggled with your eating habits like that? Like become too obsessed or not really, you know?
What I like to share with my, and I'll do it very briefly because this is not what this is supposed to be about. It's about you and your takeaways. But the athlete thing, when you mentioned that, it resonates with me. I was a college football athlete and I needed to eat 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day just to maintain my mass. And as you mentioned, in college, sometimes we get our calories in ways that looking back probably weren't the greatest, you know? Whether it's from alcohol or a full Little Caesars pizza or whatever, I got into my graduate program and started realizing, wow, like when I change the fuel I put in my body, I feel way different. And then looking back in college and some of the tendencies I had around food definitely weren't healthy. So that's where I always say it could have been considered more of in the binging and purging style of, hey, I'm an athlete, so I burn these calories so I can eat it. You know? And that's kind of where I reflect.
Yeah. And for me, honestly, I'm so grateful that being a gymnast growing up, my coaches didn't do measuring body fat or like the skinful test, which I heard other coaches were doing in gymnastics. They didn't obsess about how much we weighed, at least not when I was a gymnast. And I was a gymnast for 9 years and my coach didn't do that. So I'm super grateful for that because once I started to like, my food journey kind of led to like discovering more healthy because I got a twisted colon in three places and I had to go to the hospital and get a colonoscopy and all these crazy things. So that kind of led me more into like, what is the food I'm actually putting in my body? What is this doing to my body? Da, 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 da. But I'm blessed to say that it wasn't due to, you know, something like a disorder happening. So, but that happens all the time. And I do have a lot of friends where that's happened. So I just appreciate you being vulnerable enough to share your story and to allow people in because it becomes so relatable, especially when you're talking about what's happening in the body and in the mind, and then the reality of how long it takes and the struggle and the journey. And so I just really commend you for that. But I think, you know, can you help people to understand a little bit more? What does it like? What should you be feeling and listening for in your body when you're determining that this isn't healthy or I'm starving myself or do I really need food right now? Or what does feeling healthy and being fueled mean? I know that's a lot of questions in one, but what is it like? What does healthy feel like?
Great questions. And honestly, you start really looking at how you feel today, which you might, you know, if you've been in bad habits for a while, it might be hard to recognize that. But some things that I think are all too common in the US that people accept as normal is bloating, mm-hmm. you know, fatigue, upset stomach, indigestion, all that stuff. Like that should not be happening on a regular basis. And then I would actually look to one, yeah, what is the food you're eating that's maybe causing the bloating? You know, you feel tired after eating lunch, all those things. And two, if you have any gut issues, of course, mm-hmm. which is now the hot topic of, you know, your gut and your microbiome and all those things. So starting there and also remembering to start with whole foods. I think that's always one of my simple message is, you know, it should be mostly whole foods or minimally processed foods. you know, like the produce aisle and the vegetables, and, you know, I include protein in all that too. Starting there, because it also is common for these highly processed foods, or even sometimes what you think is kind of healthy as at a restaurant, because it can have all those oils and, like, you know, they're adding different stuff to make it taste extra good, which is totally great on occasion. But having that every single day, having those highly processed foods, you're not going to be so in touch with, you know, what's going on in my body and what's more natural, which would be, again, resorting to all of these whole foods. And if your diet is completely, you know, super processed right now, I always say, like, start small. You know, maybe you don't want to replace breakfast and dinner, but just start with, like, a healthy lunch and then slowly move on to the other areas of your day.
Yeah, quick question. You mentioned good oils or bad, like, oils. Just on the specific topic of oils, what would you say are some good oils you like to use versus ones that you'd like to avoid?
Yeah, what should people really kind of be looking out for?
Yes, I turn to more of the natural oils. So there's olive oil, avocado oil is great for cooking. I know coconut oil can be controversial, but I also include that in my healthy oil list.
I agree.
Then in terms of what are more of the inflammatory oils, then you'd find canola oil, like all the vegetable oils, which, you know, they come in those plastic bottles. They're obviously more processed. They also have a higher omega-6 ratio, which, again, is the issue in America, where really our omega-3 to omega-6 ratio should be like 1 to 1. And, like, it's more like 6 to 1 with omega-6 being, I mean, more like 20 to 1 with omega-6 being way too high from all these. Because the vegetable oils are hidden in almost every food, served at almost every restaurant, because obviously, they're the cheapest oils.
You mentioned omega-3s and omega-6s. Can you help people understand a little more what our omega-3s and omega-6s are?
Yeah, so they're a form of fatty acids that we all need. And the goal isn't to have zero omega-6, it's just to have a balance of omega-3s and omega-6. And we're really not getting enough of the omega-3s right now. So you'll find those in, you know, like fatty fish, like salmon and a few other things. So that's one supplement I also do recommend if you're not getting enough fish and stuff, is to take omega-3s, which also have been shown to have brain benefits, tons of good stuff. That's probably one of my favorite supplements.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that's something that has been shown to be deficient or out of ratio a little bit in a lot of people. I think I saw that number recently, 20 to 1 that you mentioned, which is just appalling. But moving into kind of the next thought that I wanted to get from you, and I know you're just going to crush this one, because you've kind of been mentioning it a little bit, but people talk about food with a certain language, right? And we approach food with a certain mindset. So how important to you is the language and the mindset that you surround your food with, you know, when we talk about dieting or good foods or bad foods or just whatever people might label the food that they consume?
Yeah, I do think we do get into a little bit of games of semantics on Instagram, which can be a lot to take in. But in terms of how you're talking to yourself, I think it's very important. Obviously, you want to be understanding, compassionate, forgiving to yourself. Like, you wouldn't give your friend crap for just eating one cookie. Why are you giving yourself crap for eating one cookie? You know what I mean? So that obviously is important. I know, like, the language around good and bad, I have mixed feelings about, because I see the sentiment of, like, you know, like what they're trying to say. But the reality is, yes, there's no moral value to food. Mm-hmm. Nothing is good or bad. It doesn't make you a good or bad person for eating the food. It's just more like, here, I prefer to address, like, the other thing with good and bad is that it's kind of almost too simplistic, right? It's not like, well, why is it bad or why is it good? So I think that's the other issue with it. It's like a little bit too simplistic, whereas, you know, getting to the reality of the situation, these are, you know, more processed foods. They're more processed. Maybe they're full of filler ingredients. Maybe they have way too much sugar to your day. So you're like, okay, these are more processed, so I probably don't want to be having these all day, every day. And then these are, like, less processed foods. They're full of fiber. They have all these good vitamins, nutrients, micronutrients. So that's like, why are these foods helpful to me? How do they make me feel? And then it's okay if I eat the foods that aren't so great for me, but I also pay attention to how they're making me feel. And I have a better relationship with that. And I'd say within all of that, I'd almost say moderation is probably the hardest place to come to, because sometimes it's easier to be on the extreme ends of the spectrum, but finding balance is also like very difficult.
How do people start to do that though? Like, what is balance even look like? Like, especially for you, what does balance look like? Because people can look at your page and be like, she always eats healthy. Everything she eats is so great. So how do you really define that? And what should people be striving for?
I think that's a great question, because first of all, balance looks different for everybody, right? But I do like to give out general recommendations. So when people are starting out, I think the 80-20 mindset is a great place to be in, where you're like 80% of foods that make me feel good, whole foods, and then 20% of fun foods. Again, you know, you don't have to label it like bad or anything, but like, you know, more fun, more processed foods. I think that's a great goal to aim at. And it depends on your starting place, right? Like right now, if you're at 50-50, you know, moving to 60-40, you know, 60 less processed whole foods and 40% fun foods, like that's going to be in a better place for you. So making that transition, but I do like to give a recommendation of 80-20 for people starting out. And then for myself, yes, I'm more like 95-5 or like 90-10, but that's just what works for me and what makes me feel good. Like, you absolutely do not have to do that. And I'd say, you know, again, it's more of a mindset. It's, someone asked me like, so do I calculate like 20% of my meals? Like, no. It's just more like the general mindset of like 80% of my day or week is healthier whole foods and 20% is fun foods. And one more caveat to that is like when you go on vacation or something, you know, then you might be like, you know what? I'm going to be 60-40 on vacation. So have fun with it, play with it. But I think that's a great starting place and a great mindset to approach it if you're new to this whole healthy eating thing.
I did like one thing you said in there, more specifically about like having those days of allowance when you have the fun foods, and you know, be conscious about kind of the words you use to describe them going in. And then it's the mindfulness afterwards that's the real important thing. And it's the consciousness about like, okay, I had that, and this is kind of how I feel from that. And I kind of heard you reflect that in your answer a bit.
Yeah, that was a great way, I think, for people to be able to start to dive in. Just because you give permission, you know, giving people permission to like start wherever they're at, and it doesn't have to look a certain way for every single person. And I think that's just a freedom for people that sometimes they need to hear. But when they are starting like food prep and, okay, let me start to create these healthy habits, and what should I be doing, and how often do I have to go to the store? And it can kind of sound like a daunting process if you haven't been doing it. What do you really recommend for people when they're like, okay, I want to start to build healthy habits. I want to start to identify what foods feel good in my body. What do you kind of suggest in terms of steps along the way?
Yes, I definitely have a few steps for getting started on the meal prep route. Obviously, starting off with the saying, start small, start small, start small. Mm-hmm. But first is kind of like writing out a plan. I think that will help cut back on food waste. And, you know, so you don't go to the grocery store and you feel a little overwhelmed. So write out a plan of what you want to try first. So do you want to start with just lunches? Do you want to start with breakfast and lunch, or breakfast, lunch, and dinner? But, you know, I think breakfast and lunch or like one meal or two meals are a good place to start. So I would write out what you want to have for the week or what recipes you want to try. So even if you're not ready to plan a week, you know, like, okay, I'm going to go on Pinterest and try one healthy recipe or whatever. So write out a plan and pick your recipes or food, and then write your grocery list, and then go to the grocery store. So you're already starting with a plan. And then, you know, I like to set it up Sunday, Monday to do some food prep. But if you're at home, again, just the act of going to the grocery store and writing out the plan, then you can cook as you go. If you're at home, that's obviously an option, so you don't feel overwhelmed at first. But then I personally prefer to cook a bunch of stuff on Sundays or Mondays, so I don't have to think about it during the week.
Yeah.
And then while you're prepping, you know, as you get going, try to multitask your food to save time and stuff like that. But that's always where I like to start off, is writing out that plan.
So say someone's starting this whole plan, and I love that you systemize it. That's mm-hmm. a great way to approach it. Mm-hmm. You know, systemize it and start simple and start small. I think those were some of the amazing takeaways from that one. Say someone's doing this by themselves, and they start small, and in their mind, they fail. You know, what do they do next?
That's a great question. Well, I think one, you know, could you maybe go even smaller? Like, because that's why I think some people yeah. fail. Like, did they maybe aim just a little bit too high if they want to keep it consistently in their schedule? So, you know, was the recipe a little too complex for you? Do you need to maybe pick something simpler? But also don't be afraid to try again, because this is your first time. Not every recipe is going to work, unless you're following Dom's recipes, because I know all his recipes work well. But, you know, not everything's going to work perfectly the first time. So that's okay. Don't give up. But also, like, reevaluate, like, maybe what went wrong. Like, can you fix that in the process? But, you know, I've done recipes and they failed. And, you know, I've definitely been like, oh, I want to make this recipe so I could show it on Instagram, and it just fails. And I'm like, ugh. But it doesn't mean I don't go back to the drawing board. Definitely go back to the drawing board.
Totally. And I think it's that persistence that in any aspect or in any behavior change is what helps us eventually get to that goal. So one thing that I kind of want to not really end with, but foods and healthy foods. What are some of your favorites, whether it's nutrient-dense foods or ones that are just really tasty that people can explore, or any big takeaways when it comes to picking out good, quote, healthy foods?
Yeah, actually, I think this will really help people. I think it's five categories. We'll count by the time we're done. But I like to think in five categories when I write my grocery list. So number one is vegetables. You should be getting in a crap ton of vegetables. And hopefully there's some that you like. You don't have to pick the ones you hate. You're an adult. Second on my list, I like to put fruit and carbs in the same group because they're kind of similar. But don't be afraid of fruit, especially if you're more active. Obviously, there's sugar in there, but it's natural sugar with fiber. So fruit and whole food carbs. Then I like to put healthy fats. So anywhere from nuts, seeds, avocados, you know, the oils we talked about earlier. I like to add in protein. Protein's super important. One of the most important macronutrients, actually. And, you know, I'm supportive of anyone. If they want to, you know, be omnivore, that's great. I'm eat more omnivore. But also if you're vegan, vegetarian, finding where you're going to get those proteins. And then finally, I have like extras on my list. So spices obviously are great to have on hand. Then some fun stuff. You know, I like to get some dark chocolate, some chocolate chips.
Yeah.
Although my chocolate chips don't really last long in this household because Chris likes to eat them all. but yeah, that's kind of where I start. And again, like, you know, almost thinking the one ingredients foods, right? Or if you're looking at a product that has minimally processed ingredients, you know, limiting, hopefully you understand every ingredient on that list. And if you don't, either look it up or maybe skip that.
Yeah, that's
beautiful.
Awesome.
Yeah, those are super incredibly supportive. When people are looking at protein, because you said that was like one of the big, you know, kickers of what people need to be kind of consuming, especially to keep you satiated, right? And not reaching for the carbs and the other things. What are your favorite like protein sources that you feel like, whether you eat meat or you don't, like what are some good protein sources and food that people can really start paying attention to?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm totally with you on the satiation aspect. Also just, you know, making sure you're hitting a certain amount of protein for your overall health is important. Some of my favorite is, I love any grass-fed meat, grass-fed steak. It's delicious. Wild-caught salmon. I try to opt for pasture-raised eggs, and chicken when I can. Obviously better than just the normal chicken would be free range, but you know, try to take the step up and get the pasture raised if you can find that. Those are some of my favorite ones. And then for vegans and vegetarians, I do really recommend tempeh is a great one. It's a bit less processed than tofu. So I like to opt for tempeh when I can, if you're not into some of the animal products. But yeah, those are the top ones on my list.
What about others, like if they're just looking for vegetables that might have higher protein content?
I never really peg vegetables as higher protein content. You know, if I am giving recommendations to a vegan and vegetarian, I usually talk about like quinoa, like that has a complete amino acid profile, beans and all that. But I don't tend to look at vegetables for protein. I'm more looking at that for fiber and micronutrients and making sure you're getting your greens in.
I guess when I said vegetables, I was meaning more so plants. So you hit plants.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I was like, I've also seen those like images that try to make things look like they have more protein than they do on Instagram. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm not a fan of that. I like to, you know, even if you are vegan and vegetarian, like you said, like the plants, like the beans and the quinoa and all that, it's great.
Yeah. And where did you continue? Like, how have you gained so much knowledge? I think that what you're doing is just incredible with how you continue learning, you continue exploring, you're trying it on your own body and in your own household. Like, what's really kept you on this journey and how do you continue to learn?
Well, you know, like, I'm fortunate I'm in LA. I'm surrounded by so many great minds. I mean, like, even just talking with people like yourself really helped me to continue to explore these topics, but also looking into the online research, reading books, currently in an online course too. So you never stop learning. There's always new research coming out. So it's great to like read into that and see what's working for other people. And I also, you know, I try to keep up on what other diets are working for other people. While I myself don't necessarily fall into all those trends, it's good to see, like, it is true, there's no one size fits all diet. So learning from other people's experiences and reading about that.
Yeah.
I love that. And so many knowledge bombs in the past about half hour of recording that we've done. Where can people find out more about you? I know you said you're Meow Mix on Instagram.
Yeah, that's my main page right now is Meow Mix. It's MEOWMEIX. Also, I have a podcast with my husband,
yes.
Master Your Health. We had Jen on our podcast. She was one of our first people, which I'm so thankful to Jen for that.
Yeah, you guys have had incredible people. So I just want to note that again. People need to go over, listen, subscribe, and check out all her amazing guests.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. I honestly had so much fun today, and I'm so glad I could be one of the first people on your podcast because I know this is going to be killer.
Yes, we so incredibly appreciate you and everything that you deliver for people, the way that you continue on. I mean, you've been doing it for a while now, and it's incredible the amount of information, the education behind the information, the way that you present it to people. Like, it's incredible, Amanda.
Thank you so much. I really had a blast today, and it was nice to talk about other things than what's going on currently. So super fun.
Absolutely. And helping people stay hungry for food and knowledge. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to us on the Optimal Body Podcast, where we're going to continue to bring you the PT pearls and guests that will help you find your optimal body. Now, head over to wherever you listen to this and leave us an honest review, and head to docgenfit.com/podcast where you can find all the show notes.
Don't forget that we're going to give away a free month to someone who subscribes, leaves us an awesome review, and lets us know what they want to review on the next PT Pearl. So we'll be choosing that once a week to get into a free month of the Optimal Body membership.